As Unitarian Universalists, we draw inspiration from many sources. The Princess Bride is a favorite movie in my home. For those of you who don't know it, it's a romantic comedy fantasy tale about a young couple who find true love and all of their adventures. So when young Wesley, the young man, takes off to find his fortune so he can provide for Buttercup, his betrothed, he's kidnapped by the dread pirate Roberts and presumed dead. But what's really happening is the dread pirate Roberts is training him to take over his ship. Buttercup believes Wesley to be dead and 5 years later accepts the marriage proposal of the local prince, Humperdinck. But then Buttercup is kidnapped by a band of villains and Wesley returns to save her and is promptly captured by Humperdinck's men. And since he's a threat to Humperdinck's grand plan to rule the kingdom, he's tortured to death. Wesley's friends find his body and take him to Miracle Max, who pronounces him only mostly dead. So there's this scene that I'm sure some of you are familiar with, where Wesley's friends are trying to talk Miracle Max into bringing him back to life. And Max is trying to find out if reviving him would indeed be a worthy cause. Miracle Max inflates Wesley's chest with a bellows and asks him, "What's so important? What you got here that's worth living for?" And as he pushes on Wesley's chest, Wesley breathes out the words, "True love." Similar to what I asked our children just a little while ago, I'm wondering what words would push out through your lips if you were in Wesley's unfortunate shoes. For me, it would be family. Being in a continually growing relationship with my husband and seeing my daughter learn and grow and become her own person is the thing that keeps me going. And there are other things in my life that make it worth living. Daily walks along the lake with my dog, fulfilling work, powerful relationships that comfort me and challenge me, singing, emerging crocuses, trees, sunlight, rain. Last week, I invited you all into conversation with each other about some of the things you appreciate or celebrate in the natural world. I asked you to reflect on some things you love about being alive on Earth and on a place that was magical to you as a child. I invite you now to bring those things and those places back into your mind, back into your being, or if you weren't here last week, to think about them for the first time. A place that was magical to you as a child, and some things you love about being alive on Earth. We didn't take the time for this last week, and so I invite you now into a space of gratitude as you consider those amazing places. Gratitude is a blessing. And frankly, despite being well aware of all that is good in my life, I need a blessing this morning. I'm tired, I'm afraid. I'm pretty sure the work I'm called to do is a little bigger than I can handle. It's not that I'm not doing enough. I'm doing plenty. I'm developing relationships that will inform me as I learn what I can do to end state violence against black people. I'm supporting other white people who want to make a difference. I'm teaching my daughter to think critically about her surroundings, just as I'm learning to think critically about the systems of which I'm a part. I'm learning to see injustice for myself, to not always have to have it pointed out to me. I serve organizations that do the work of anti-racism and environmental justice. I'm hearing the stories of my black siblings and cousins, and I'm moved by them, moved into sorrow and outrage. And I'm hearing other stories, too, about other kinds of unfairness in how we humans treat each other and our Earth home. I'm sure you're hearing them, too. Indiana has a new law on the books that will protect businesses who choose to discriminate against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people in the name of religious beliefs. It's where I lived for 12 years. The governor signed that bill behind closed doors after refusing to answer constituents' phone calls for 2 days. California is in its fourth year of severe drought, which is acknowledged to be a result of human-caused climate change. Water shortages have become the new normal, and farmers and ranchers are struggling with how to continue to grow not just their food, but the nation's food. Salmon, a staple for many societies, can't get to their river, their upriver breeding grounds because there's not enough water in the rivers to get from ocean to river. In the Arctic, warming is happening faster than the rest of the world, resulting in decreased sea ice, snow cover, and permafrost. Immediate local impacts include increased occurrence of wildfires due to drier forests and habitat loss for Arctic animals, including reindeer. Long-term repercussions include impacts on the populations of indigenous people who rely on the reindeer for their lives and their livelihoods, and a faster rate of climate change for the rest of the planet. And here in Wisconsin, researchers predict ever-increasing incidences of extreme heat in urban areas, putting our most vulnerable people at risk. Invasive species and pests will become a greater threat to our forests, making it necessary to learn how to manage those forests differently. Lower lake levels will make many channels, many shipping channels, impassable, impacting how we get things. Days of ice cover have progressively decreased on Lakes Monona and Mendota, increasing evaporation rates and year-round water temperatures, which is already changing the profile of fish species in the lakes. Jan Richardson wrote, "There is nothing a blessing is better suited for than an ending. Nothing that cries out more for a blessing than when a world is falling apart. Awareness of what is good in our lives, not as denial of all these stories of harm and inequity, but in the face of them. Awareness of what is good in our lives and gratitude is the blessing that is made for these difficult times." On a personal level, gratitude keeps us in the present, able to continue to function despite fear. And at the systemic level, it counters the destructive nature of what has been called the industrial growth society, the normative understanding of our culture as needing ever-increasing resources to sustain ever-increasing growth. This understanding moves us into consumerism, as we are told and we believe that we never have enough. And that consumerism makes us view our world as a commodity. It forces us into division, into haves and have-nots. It forces us to see some of Earth's creatures as superior to others, to see humans as having more of a right to be here than other animals. And it divides us further, seeing some humans as having more of a right to goods and services than others. Gratitude pulls us away from this understanding, this consumer-based industrial growth society understanding of who we are and how we should be. It grounds us and opens our heart minds into new ways of understanding each other and our relationships. Gratitude helps us to feel good about what we do have, and more importantly, helps bring us to an understanding that we actually do have enough. This is countercultural, and it's politically subversive. And if we're to stop the destruction of ourselves and our planet, it is necessary. Sometimes the blessing is the knowing that the best thing we can do is decide that we'll be together in our fear. And that can be like facing a wall of fire and summoning the courage to pass through it. It's where I feel like I am right now, facing a wall of fire. It's where I feel where we are, we humans, collectively. It's become necessary for us to pass through it, to let it burn away that which has kept us complacent, to allow ourselves to be transformed by the passion and the righteous anger that arises when we awaken to what we've done to ourselves and each other and our earth in the name of progress. But in order to do that, we have to let ourselves feel it. Feel that passion and anger. In one of my former careers, I worked for the Kentucky State Agency that regulated surface coal mining. I laugh now. This was a horrible job for me. But it was the only job where we landed for which I was qualified and for which I could use my skills. I was one of three biologists there. And our job was to review these permit applications from mining operators for potential impacts to endangered species and water resources. It was a very specialized section in the agency. And there were, in actuality, very few biological resources that could stop a coal mine application from being approved. In fact, it wasn't my job to stop the mining. It was my job to make sure the impacts were minimized so a mine plan could go forward. So basically, I got to go to mountains before their tops were blown off and look for potential habitat for endangered species or high-quality streams. And if I did find anything significant enough to impact the mining plan, which happened pretty rarely, find a way to make it okay to approve the plan. Because we need coal. One day, I was out in the field to look at a site adjacent to an active mine, and the operator took me over to see the active site after our walk in the woods. It was my first time on an active coal mine, and it was like visiting another world. The trees were gone. The shape of the land was completely unnatural. There was bare dirt and rock as far as I could see, nothing but gray and dull brown, except for off in the distance in one direction, beyond the limits of the active mine, where there were still some trees and natural contours. They served as quite a contrast. I was amazed at this moonscape I was standing in, watching all the huge equipment scuttle back and forth with all of the overburden, is the name for the rock on top of the coal, overburden. Watching all of these trucks scuttle around to get at that coal. I was even further amazed when I was offered and accepted a ride in one of the dump trucks. I'm out there, might as well have some fun. So I could feel. You don't know this about me yet. I have a love for large power equipment. Very counter to my environmental ethic, but it's there. So I'm in this truck, this oversized, huge dump truck, and I can feel it bounce like a toy when the excavator drops these huge scoops of earth and rock into it as they dug at the mountain to get the coal. And then the enormity of what I was doing to make a living hit me. I was being complicit with something that every bone in my body knew was wrong. I was helping to turn these beautiful mountains into bare moonscapes in support of resource extraction that was a source of energy for our ever-growing and ever more greedy species. I left that agency pretty soon after this and started working for myself, selling candles at home shows. Truth. As soon as I had a chance to really feel what I was doing, as soon as it became real in that visceral way, I had to stop. One could argue that it went on without me, and that it was good that someone with such a strong environmental ethic was doing the job, but I couldn't do it anymore. The wall of fire I had to pass through to put my actions more into alignment with my convictions when I worked for the Department for Surface Mining was a combination of elation and horror at my power. Because you see, there's something very appealing, even seductive, about being in control of that level of destruction, some visceral sense of control and domination. Being in that dump truck put me in touch with that. Those of you who use power equipment of some kind might be able to resonate with what I'm trying to express. The wall of fire was my reckoning with the pain I was feeling for the earth as I was inflicting it. The challenge in this was to allow myself to feel that pain without letting it overwhelm me with guilt, to consider the pain as a normal response to what I was doing, and to use it to guide my next steps instead of burying it out of the fear of feeling it. I'm feeling similarly now. I've been complicit with systems of oppression that have harmed the earth and other beings, including my human cousins. And as I build relationships with people in communities who have been harmed, including people of color, I hear their stories of how these systems have hurt them. Not having built those systems, but being an unaware and unwilling party to them, having been an unwilling and unaware party to them, I feel less guilt than I might, and I feel more of a sense of moral outrage. I would feel that outrage in hearing those stories no matter what, similarly to looking at coal mining permit applications without that picture in my mind of what that moonscape looked like. I would feel that outrage no matter what. And I've been acting and preaching out of that outrage. What I'm learning now, though, is that the more I hear the stories from people I'm in connection with, from people of color that I'm meeting, from people in communities that are being harmed by climate change, the more personal those stories get. And so what Mark Morrison Reed preached about in Alabama, in Birmingham, Alabama, a couple of weeks ago, is true. It's our relationships that move us into responding to the call of healing the world. And it's our relationships that make it possible for us to sit with the discomfort that comes with feeling the pain of having been part of that problem. So this pain, too, is a blessing. This blessing will not fix you, will not mend you, will not give you false comfort. It will not talk to you about one door opening while another closes. It will simply sit itself beside you among the shards and gently turn your face toward the direction from which the light will come, gathering itself about you as the world begins again. May it be so. And may we make it so.